Welcome to this evening's Christmas Gap Conference. And it's a pleasure to introduce Wolfgang Stumpy, who's at Kew Gardens. And he's Kew's seed morphologist at the Millennium Seed Bank since 2003. He did his first degree in Kaiserslautern in Germany, in botany, and a PhD on the comparative seed morphology and anatomy of the Fabaceae. He's written a number of, he's a Canadian photographer, has written a number of books. His first book, Seeds, the Time Capsules of Life, was published in 2006 and won the title of Outstanding Book of the Year. And was awarded a gold medal by the Independent Publishers Book Awards. And he's also written books on fruits, edible, inedible, and incredible, 2008, and The Wonders of the World, of the Plant Kingdom, 2014. So as well as doing the fascinating work that you're going to hear about, he's done a lot of interesting popular science all around roots and seeds. So, welcome.
Thanks for coming. This will be a bit more serious, but hopefully not too serious. I'll take you to Madagascar and talk about some of Madagascar's orphans of extinction. Madagascar is the fourth biggest island on Earth after Greenland, Borneo, and New Guinea, and it's just about 500 kilometers off the east coast of Africa. People who go to Madagascar go there for the natural history, to experience the landscapes and the plants and the animals, and it is truly an amazing place because it's been isolated for 88 million years from all other land masses. So Madagascar has done its own thing already at the time when there were still dinosaurs around for another 20 million years. So when you go to Madagascar, you see lots of strange plants and animals, and one of the strangest plants is the baobab trees. In Madagascar, you find lots of souvenirs with those trees on. And this is the famous avenue of baobabs near Morondav on the west coast. So in the forest, what is left of them, you see a lot of wildlife, very strange creatures all over the place. Madagascar has the highest diversity of chameleons. And then, of course, lemurs. Lemurs are Madagascar's unique primates. They're prosimians, so they're half monkeys, if you like. They have a snout, the Chinese call them fox monkeys, and they've got limited color vision. They can't see red, they can only see green and blue, which is different. So when you go to Madagascar to study fruit dispersal, you need to know this to understand the sign language of nature, which is a lot to do with dispersal. There's all sorts of other strange creatures. The fossa is the biggest carnivore on the island. There's tenrex, the strange camel neck beetle. It's a very, very odd place, absolutely fascinating. This is how an intact forest looks. This is the entrance to Ranomafan National Park. Absolutely gorgeous, amazing, beautiful, full of strange plants and animals. But as you drive across Madagascar, most of it looks like this. So in fact, 90% of Madagascar's original vegetation has already disappeared. So what you find is small pockets. This is a forest remnant north of Tananarivo, where I went in March. It's a gorge with a tiny piece of forest left. The rest has been chopped down. There's a handful of lemurs in there, and we were specifically looking for very large fruits and seeds that would be adapted to be dispersed by very large animals, specifically lemurs, and we could already tell very quickly that those small forest fragments have hardly got any diversity left, and it's so disturbed that we need to go to the big national parks for the type of research we want to do. So going back 2,000 years before Madagascar has been changed through human influence, there was at least 48 species of very large animals, megafauna you can call them. There was elephant birds, about six species. They weighed up to half a ton. Giant tortoises, there was a pygmy hippo, and there were 17 species of giant lemurs. All these 17 species were bigger than the biggest lemur alive today. So the biggest one was the size of a gorilla. There might even have bigger ones, who knows? More about that later.
So we are interested in the gaps that these animals have left when they died out. The biggest and most famous extinct animal of the last ice age is the mammoth. Everybody knows mammoths. They occurred in North America and, of course, in the Eurasia. And they were mega herbivores. They ate plants and they also ate fruits. And for a plant, it is actually advantageous to enter a relationship, a dispersal relationship with mega herbivores, because they're big animals. They can swallow big seeds. Big seeds have a much better chance to establish a new plant than a small seed. Also, mega herbivores have much bigger home ranges than small animals, so they travel a long distance. And the seed is the one and only unique opportunity in a plant's life to travel, to go from A to B. So plants try to make the most of that, to travel. At one chance in their life, they want to make the most. So a lot of plants have actually entered relationships with these big animals to have the seeds dispersed, which means they offer very big fruits with often very big seeds. And in 1982, Jansen, he's a brilliant ecologist, he studied forests in Costa Rica, and he found these really huge fruits. These are football-sized fruits, size fruits of the calabash tree. Maclura is the Osage orange. It's a tree you can grow in the UK. You got it at Kew. That photo was taken on the tree at Kew. These very big fruits, they're just too big to fit into any mouth alive. It just doesn't make any sense. And if you have a healthy understanding of evolution, you can smell that there's something out of kilter. And he suggested that these plants are actually remnants, and they were adapted to the megafauna that died out at the end of the last ice age. There was a lot of criticism towards this, because it's very hard to prove that something has been dispersed by something that doesn't exist anymore, as you can imagine. In the meantime, a group in Brazil have done some amazing work on anachronisms in South America. Actually, wherever you go in the world, you find anachronisms. You find them in Asia, you find them in Europe, you find them in Australia. The first megafauna that was wiped out was the Australian one 50,000 years ago. So you find them everywhere. Once you've got your evolutionary goggles on and you go places, you find these things that these plants that obviously are adapted to animals that don't exist anymore. So the research is picking up on anachronisms, and this is one good example of recent research. The same people, Galletti and Hansen, then in 2009 wrote a science paper reminding us of the forgotten megafauna, how there was different types of megafauna in different parts of the world, and the very recent extinctions in Madagascar. The extinction is very recent. In America, it's 13 to 10,000 years ago, and then in Madagascar, it's between 2,000 and 400 years ago. So 400 years ago, there would have just been still giant lemurs probably. And they also suggest that the concept of megafauna is, of course, context dependent. Megafauna in North America and South America would have meant any animal above 1,000 kilos, above a ton. There would have been mammoths, mastodons. Madagascar never had any mega herbivores. The biggest animal was an elephant bird, which weighed up to 500 kilos. So megafauna is different. You have to define it differently in Madagascar because there wasn't any elephants. And then in Mauritius, the giant tortoise only died out 250 years ago, probably. So that's fairly recent. And because these extinctions are so recent in Madagascar, we should still expect quite a few species of plants hanging around that are waiting for those guys, although they never come back. So what is a dispersal anachronism? It's animal-dispersed fruits which display strikingly unfit traits and patterns to meet the physical capabilities and sensory preferences of ex-dispersers. To spot this, you have to have, of course, a good understanding of evolution, and that waste is punished in the race of evolution. So whenever you see a fruit that is bigger than the animal eating it, there's something not right. Anything that exceeds the gape size, the feeding capacity, the appetite, or anything of an animal is not a match.
the fact that an animal eats a frog does not mean it is a co-adapted disperser, because lots of animals eat lots of frogs. Most of them are pulp thieves, or they eat seeds, they destroy the seeds. So we're looking for bona fide dispersers, animals that do not destroy the seeds and that are capable of swallowing the seeds whole. Because fleshy frogs, they don't just want to get eaten, they have to be eaten. The pulp has to be removed. If the pulp is not removed, the fruit drops to the ground and it attracts the nutrients that are in the fruit, the sweet pulp, to attract dispersers, will attract fungi and bacteria. They destroy the fruit and the seeds inside. There's been research in Africa, for example, where elephants have disappeared and elephant-dispersed fruits like Balanitis wilsoniana. The survival of seedlings goes down 95% because the pulp is removed and the seed is being destroyed by fungi and bacteria. So fleshy fruits don't want to be eaten, they have to be eaten so that the pulp is digested and the seeds are basically cleaned. Mango is a good example. If you like to eat mangoes, you'll have noticed these irritating hairs that get stuck between your teeth as you try to eat the pulp off. That is a clever ruse by the plant to tell the animal that you can't just eat the pulp. If you want the pulp, you have to swallow the whole thing. So you can't just eat the pulp off. It tricks the animal into swallowing the whole fruit, and then the pulp is digested off. And a mango is a typical elephant fruit, if you like. Elephants eat mangoes, and they've got a throat large enough to swallow the actual seed. So when you go to the field, how do you spot dispersal anachronism? How do you spot that there's something wrong? First of all, if you find a plant, usually a tree, with very large fruits that have a delicious taste, and they all drop to the ground and rot, no one's eating them, there's something wrong, because that tree is offering something edible and no one wants it or no one eats it. This is a strychnos that we found in Madagascar in March. We ate those fruits. You find very big seeds inside that are covered with a very thin pulp. And although this has nothing to do with the mango, it has got the most amazing taste of mango that you can ever imagine. It's got no trace of bitterness. It tastes like the perfect mango. And it's got nothing to do with mango. I don't know how that happens. It's even the same color as a mango. So we found that fruit, and we loved it. And we thought if there would be lemurs around, they would love it too. But obviously, in the area where we photographed this, there's no more lemurs. If there's insufficient dispersal by extant animals, that's also a good indicator. Dispersal distances are very low. You'd always get some rodents dragging the fruits around, for example. If there would be rodents around, they'd probably nibble on those fruits, they'd drag them across the ground and provide some limited dispersal, but not great distances. Then, of course, that's our proxy we use for our research, or at least initially, is if the seeds inside the fruit are too big to fit down the throat of any living disperser, they must be anachronistic, because they should be swallowed by something or someone, but no one can actually physically do that. So that's a very simple and easy proxy to use, but it's very, very, very effective. Also, if you find a species with animal dispersed fruits and it's got very patchy or restricted distribution, that's also a good indicator that there's something wrong. Usually dispersal doesn't function anymore due to the extinction of the animal dispersers. So what is left in Madagascar today in terms of animal dispersers? Madagascar is a very strange place. The best dispersers in tropical and subtropical environments are really birds and then primates. Birds can fly, they can take seeds over big distances, so adaptation to bird dispersal is very advantageous for plants. Also primates and bats play big roles in tropical ecosystems. For example, in the Daintree rainforest in Queensland, you'd find that over 95% of plants produce fleshy fruits that are eaten by some animal. So animal dispersal is good because, contrary to wind dispersal, animals have predictive behavioral patterns. They go certain places and don't go others, whereas wind can just blow anything anywhere, and a lot goes to waste. So waste is reduced
if plants enter relationships with animals, because they go certain places and dump the seeds in certain places. And by adapting to a certain guild of dispersers, plants can actually direct the dispersal of their seeds. So in Madagascar, the lemurs are the main dispersers, because there's only about 5 species of birds and 3 species of bats. And of those 5 species of birds in the whole of Madagascar, only about 3 are really good seed dispersers. The others tend to destroy the seeds. So it's a strange place. Only 21 species left that can disperse seeds in Madagascar. That is very different to other tropical environments. Reptiles, as a tortoise, that might play a role in seed dispersal. No one's ever looked at that. Rodents, 21 species of strange rodents. Again, they probably do some dispersal, but they're usually not the co-adapted dispersers of the species. But no one's done research on that, at least not much. And then introduce livestock. What you found in North America is that introduced livestock like horses and cattle have filled some of those gaps that was left by the Ice Age megafauna. So horses started eating those big throats that were meant for mammoths and mastodons and cows. So they filled some of the gaps that were left by the ancient megafauna. And in Madagascar, maybe horses and cattle or goats or bush pigs do some of the dispersal, but again, no one's ever looked at that. So Madagascar experiences dramatic loss of at least 48 large species between 2,000 and 400 years ago. That's very recent. So in evolutionary terms, the plants that have been adapted to those species wouldn't have changed a bit. They would still look exactly the same. So it's a 48 species of mammals, birds, and reptiles that got lost. The most likely cause really is human activities. Until recently, it was said there was a big drought, a prolonged drought in Madagascar that probably changed vegetation types and at least contributed to the extinction of those large animals. But there's just been a paper published by Crowley et al. Looking at nitrogen isotopes in the bones of those giant lemurs, and they found there's no change in N15 in the bones. N15 goes up with aridity. There's no change, so there is no trace in the bones that there was ever any pronounced aridity in the area. And the only explanation left is that people slaughtered those animals. So for our purposes, megafauna in Madagascar means that every animal, every native frugivore that is larger than the largest living lemur, which is the red ruffed lemur with 3.5 kilos, to us means megafauna. Okay, that doesn't mean huge animals, but bigger than the largest living lemur. Federman et al. Published a paper in PNAS in April this year. They were looking at dispersal of a certain genus of Bursa raceyi in Madagascar, and they also looked at the skulls of extant and dead lemurs, of extinct lemurs. And what they did is they did a regression and calculated the maximum ingestible food size that these extinct lemurs would have been able to swallow based on the allometric relationship between body mass and gape size. So they looked at the gape size of extant lemurs, and they looked at Varesia rubra weighing 3.4 kilos, and then they did the calculation, and they found that Paleopropithecus could probably swallow the seeds of Borassus madagascariensis, which are nearly 7 centimeters. That's very big. You wouldn't try that at home. Remember, it has to also come out at the other end. So this is quite a feat. Now, we've been corresponding with Federman and asked them for their data, and they very kindly gave us their data, and we discovered that they looked at what these lemurs can actually take in their mouth. But we use data that actually are based on the largest seed that has ever been found to be swallowed and excreted by the largest living lemur, and that was different. So we run that regression again, and we found that
it's not 7 centimeters that Paleoprolopithecus could swallow, but rather 4.3 maybe, if that's right. There's always, with these calculations, there's always the possibility you make an error. But that would mean that for Borassus madagascariensis to be dispersed by any animal, there should have been even bigger lemurs than the biggest that have ever been discovered. So maybe there's still something waiting in Madagascar to be found. And you can use those fruits as proxies to make these, to put up these hypotheses, to make these predictions. So these are extant lemurs. The biggest ones are Varesia rubra and Varesia variegata. They can swallow seeds of up to 2.46 centimeters in diameter. And remember, it's not the length that matters so much. I can swallow a spaghetti of 30 centimeters in one piece as long as it's very thin. It's the second largest dimension that matters. It's the width. So we're looking at the width. We're not so much interested in the length. It's the second largest diameter that is the limiting factor. I don't think I could swallow a 2.5. You have a question?
But there are bigger lemur species, right? Like the Indri, for example. And they don't eat fruit at all?
No, they only eat leaves.
Okay.
It's the frugivorous lemurs we need to look at. So there is 100 species of lemurs, 101 species of lemurs. Most of them eat leaves or insects. There's 21 that are really frugivorous. Others are granivorous. They eat fruits, but they also eat the seeds. So you need the ones that really eat fruit and they do not chew the seeds, because the seeds need to have to germinate when they come out again. So yeah, the Indri is the biggest living lemur, but it's not a frugivore. So we need to look at those guys who actually ate fruits. And you can tell by their teeth. These diets are inferred from their tooth structure. So Varesia rubra and Varesia variegata are the biggest dispersers in Madagascar, and they're both critically endangered. That means they're at the brink of extinction. We're already having a problem having lost all these species. There were 17 giant lemurs, and about half of them were probably good seed dispersers, and they have gone. They must have left some orphans in the Madagascan flora. So anachronism is not an absolute concept. A plant can have lost all its dispersers, and no animal will eat the fruits. That's extreme anachronism. And there's, of course, you can imagine, a gray zone. There's still a few left, but not enough to deliver the dispersal service that plant has been adapted to. So usually when you find a plant that has got only one seed disperser left, that is a sign that this is a remnant of what used to be a much larger assemblage of dispersers. It makes no sense for a plant to enter such a very close dispersal relationship with a single animal species. It would just be too risky. So, hang on. So we, just as a working hypothesis, for us to find species where we should maybe have a closer look, we said if there's 5 or less native dispersers, we have a look, see whether there's anything wrong. That's just completely arbitrary. There are no figures that tell you that the plant should have at least X number of dispersers. So that's just a working hypothesis for us. The first family we looked at was the bean family, the legumes, simply because Q have published a complete treatment of the family in Madagascar. So that's the one plant family for which we have the most solid and detailed information. So we started with the legumes. There's 10,650 flowering plant species in Madagascar, and 84% of them you find nowhere else on Earth. So yes, if you do go to Madagascar, it is a bit like going to a different planet, because everything you see is different. Legumes have 626 species. It's a pretty big family, and there's 70% endemism. And we only looked at the endemic species, the 450 endemic species. We found that at least 27 of those 450 species are animal dispersed. That is actually not a lot. We expected a lot more. A lot of legumes are wing dispersed, like these guys. You see here, they've got wing fruits. They're wing dispersed. Then many of them have autochorus fruit, which means the fruits explode and churn out the seeds. So they don't need animals for dispersal. But then others, like these, They're clearly animalist birds. These are partly frogs, and because lemurs have this limited color vision, they're not very, very colorful. You won't find red frogs trying to attract the lemur because the lemur can't see red. So they're usually brown, yellow, greenish, this kind of frog. Then you get very colorful frogs. Birds, for example, birds can see colors like we can see them. They've got very good color vision. They can even see ultraviolet light, so they can even see more colors than us. They've got rubbish noses. They don't use their noses to find their food, but they use their eyes. They've got very keen color vision. So colorful frogs usually are adapted to bird dispersal. And this is certainly the case here and there, because this would be wasted on lemurs. Skimming the literature, there's about 36 dispersal studies in Madagascar where poor students had to go to the field for 6 or 12 months and collect lemur feces, wash it, get the seeds out, germinate them, because really only the seed that can still germinate after the gut passage counts as properly dispersed. And so far, only 4 legume species have been found in the feces of lemurs, and these are the 4 species: Baudouinia, Phlegiformis, Cordyla madagascariensis, Archaea madagascariensis, and this is tamarind. It's native to Madagascar, but not endemic. Tamarind is also found in Africa and India, so that doesn't really count. So really, of the endemic species, we know that 3 are dispersed by lemurs. What happens to the rest? So these are our results. 27 species have animal dispersed fruits and legumes based on seed size, and seed size alone. We did not take into account fruit size. We tried to be as conservative as we could. Just seed size. If the seeds are too big to go down the gob, there's something wrong. So 6 endemic species qualify as anachronistic. That's not a lot. These are the 6. Admittedly, I expected a lot more spectacular results, and there are other plant families where we will find those. It just happened that legumes was not one of the most affected families, at least that's how it appears. So this Erythrina is extremely anachronistic because its large seeds don't fit down the throat of any bird alive, because this is bird dispersal, so we need to look at the birds. So they were probably attracting elephant birds for dispersal. They're very, very colorful. There actually is nothing to eat. They cheat the birds. They trick them to think or to believe that this is a fleshy berry or something, and then they're actually very hard seeds, which is why they're very useful to make botanical jewelry. So if you buy botanical jewelry, you very often find these red and black seeds because they're so pretty. So just based on seed size, these species would have 2 potential bird dispersers. This species has got 4 potential lemur dispersers, and Erythrophyllum cominga has got 5 potential dispersers. That's looking at seed size and maximum ingested food size of X lemurs. Then if you look at the distribution, do these plants actually co-occur with their potential dispersers? You get this. This is kind of okay. But then Erythrophyllum, there would be 5 lemurs that could still disperse the fruits, but none of them co-occur with that species. That means that species is no longer dispersed, but it occurs. And it's not been assessed by the IUCN, so we don't know whether it's threatened or not. This guy, Elipocarpus cinnamitroides, is critically endangered. We call that, 18 lemur species are still alive that could eat those fruits and disperse the seeds, and yet none of them co-occur in its habitat because of habitat destruction. We call that locally extreme anachronism, because the species are not globally extinct, but locally they're gone. So effectively, Elicmocarpus is extremely anachronistic where it occurs. It's critically endangered down to 21 individuals in a small population in southeast Madagascar. These are lemur populations that could still disperse the seeds, but you can see they're far away. So Elicmocarpus is a living dead. In fact, the population might already be so impoverished genetically that under the best of circumstances, it could not recover.
That's very, very sad.
And you can, I mean, if I look at those throats, they turn brown eventually. I can just tell by looking at the throats that they're lima dispersed.
Just
from the dispersed syndrome.
So why are we doing this? Because megafauna extinction has severe consequences. The decrease in the total number of seeds dispersed is one thing that leads to reduced seed dispersal distances and areas, because if there is still dispersal, the distance is usually shorter because it's done by smaller animals. Then reduced geographic ranges mean restricted gene flow
via seeds, and that leads to limited genetic variation within populations and a high genetic differentiation between populations. So if you go to the field and you look at the genetic diversity within these populations, you find that there's a lot of inbreeding within a certain population, and if you find a second population of the same species, you'll find that there's big differences between the two of them because there's no more exchange. That's called an alley effect. If individual fitness is reduced, the smaller the population becomes, that's called an alley effect. There's ecological alley effects. This has been developed mainly for animals. If there's less individuals, for example, there's a lower chance of finding a mate, so the reproductive fitness of the individual is reduced, and that leads to a further shrinking of the population, which reinforces the situation that it's even harder to find a mate, and species enter an extinction vortex. Genetically the same. There's first the genetic, there's gene drift. As the population shrinks, the genetic diversity shrinks, and that can have inbreeding effects that leads to certain fitness components being impacted, and that then leads to a demographic alley effect, which means that the average individual reproductivity goes down. So the population effectively keeps shrinking faster and faster and faster until it goes extinct. And that is really the problem with dysfunctional dispersal. You end up having living dead. You can have plants still existing, but they're basically already extinct. They're still alive, but they have no chance for the population to recover. And that's what you call extinction death. And I fear that in Madagascar, with the few results we have now, we only started this a year and a half ago, there's more to come. And I fear that a lot of the unique species in Madagascar are already living dead. But as I said, no one has looked at that yet. There's more and more papers now published about the importance of dispersal. This, for example, from 2014, they've run some models and they found that dispersal loss leads to a tenfold increase in the probability of extinction. That is a pretty stark message, and that hasn't been taken into account by IUCN, for example, when species are assessed according to their extinction risk. IUCN, for example, doesn't look at whether the dispersal mechanisms are still in place in the natural habitat. And that should be taken into account, because if it is an animal dispersed species that has lost its disperser, they should be considered threatened with extinction purely on the basis of dysfunctional dispersal. So what next? We've been to Madagascar in March for 3 weeks, and we crisscrossed the center of the country looking for suitable places to find anachronistic throats. So we went to some small reserves, we went to some national parks, and as I said, we very quickly realized that those small forest fragments are so impoverished and so destroyed that they were almost useless for our purposes. We had to go to the big national parks like Mata Dia, Ranomafan, and Kirindi, where you still get very, very good and healthy looking forests to find those throats. And there's actually a lot. Palms. This palm we actually didn't find this, but this has been described before. It's got this stone that is really, really big. That's completely, extremely anachronistic. No animal can swallow this. And it might even have been adapted to elephant birds because of those ridges on the stone. It's very heavily armored.
a lemur, a frugivorous lemur, wouldn't chew the seeds. Seeds in fleshy fruits, they have two ways of protecting themselves. They can either have a very, very hard seed coat. So if you go to Africa and you you pick one of those acacia pods that are eaten by elephants, they would have extremely hard seeds because they have to withstand the mastication of elephants and antelopes. Other fruits, if you take an avocado seed has got no hard seed coat. It's just a brown skin. You can actually easily chew an avocado seed. And if you've ever tried that, you'd probably not try it again, because if they don't have any chemical protection, they have chemical protection. They either taste really bad or they're poisonous. So when you get seeds with fruits with very large seeds, they can either be heavily armored or they can have a thin seed coat but be chemically protected. And because lemurs don't chew the seeds, a lot of the seeds don't really have don't have to have hard seed coats. You can see that here. These seeds have got very soft seed coats, and these here. When you see something like this, really heavily armored, that could argue for elephant bird dispersal, because elephant birds, they wouldn't chew their food, but they've got gizzards where everything is ground. They would swallow stones like ostriches, and they have a gizzard that grinds everything down. So this seed would have to have a very, very hard coat to protect it from the elephant bird's gut. And these ridges on their would help against that that grinding. So it looks like this was probably not adapted to lemur dispersal, but rather elephant bird dispersal. And then all the baobabs have these big brown hairy fruits. They have a hard shell. Inside, the seeds are wrapped into a sweet tasting pulp. You can eat it. You can buy these fruits at the market in Madagascar, and you take out the seeds and put them in water, and after a few hours you have a refreshing drink. It tastes a bit like dried apple, very high in vitamin C. So these fruits are clearly not bird dispersed. They're very big, they're boring looking brown fruits, and they have a very hard shell. So the animal that was supposed to eat the seeds had to have some dexterity to break that shell and get the seeds out. Birds don't have that dexterity, they haven't got talents to do that. So the only animal really, as we know, is lemurs who can do that, and all extant lemurs are way too small to disperse those seeds. And so we found lots of others. That's the strychnos with the mango seed. You see, it looks like a mango even, and it tastes absolutely incredible. But no animal would eat that. Then we found this. It's already a bit rotten, but this is a fruit of a symphonia. It was this size. This is really, really big. Even the biggest extinct frugivorous lemur, I don't know whether he could have eaten one of them in one session. So this is huge. I don't know what dispersed this. This is a massive fruit. These seeds we found, the Salacia and the Celastraceae, way too big for any animal to swallow them. So this is extremely anachronistic, and we can say that just because the seeds are too big. We found some other species, this Dandolphia. Big fruits like this, very fleshy inside. This is a Cassiflorace. That's only about a third of the fruit. So that was a fruit about this big. And that fruit has got small seeds, but lots of them. So there's two different strategies, and it's been found in South America as well. You can have large fruits with very small, with very large, but few seeds, and you get large fruits with a lot of small seeds, because if the animal chews the pulp, if you have lots of small seeds, there's always quite a few that escape mastication. And we only look at seed size. So if you start looking at fruit size, there'll be more species. Then obviously, this is too big for an extant lemur to eat in one session. And a fruit would never be bigger than the feeding capacity of the co-adaptive dispersal. It wouldn't make any sense. That would be too much waste. So there's a lot waiting to be discovered in Madagascar in terms of anachronistic fruits. So what next? We carried out a comparative study of the whole of the Madagascan flowering plants as far as we could with the data that's published, and we found a few hundred of species that are most likely anachronistic. That needs to be backed up with more field work. Paleontology evidence would be good, but it's hard to get
There's no coprolites, there's no subfossil feces of elephant birds, for example, where you could look and see whether there's any seeds in what they ate. Likewise, from giant lemurs, there's hardly anything left. And in the humid part of the island along the east coast, because of the climate, nothing has been preserved. So because those extinctions happened pretty recently, any animal that would have died in the wet tropical forest would have just completely disappeared by now. So there's nothing left. And then genetics would probably be a good idea, and the population genetics of those anachronistic species, if they look highly inbred, that's a good indication that it's really due to dysfunction of dispersal. This is our team in Madagascar. We have an office in Madagascar with about 15 people, without whom we could not do this. It's very difficult to do research in Madagascar. You need permits. It's very bureaucratic. And these people help us translating our proposals into French. They go to the local authorities. They help plan the field work. They are just fantastic. They pack the car, everything. You have to take lots of things to the field, including gas cookers and tents and God knows what else. And they help us with all of that. So without them, we really couldn't do this. So big thank you to all of them. And acknowledgements to lots of people. Cathy Willis, who's our director of science, Stuart Cable, who heads the office in Madagascar, and then that's our staff in Madagascar in the office. And I should mention that I have money from the Joseph Jones and Daisy and Graham Rattenberry Charitable Trust, with which I can pay a postdoc, Aurélie, who works with me until June. So Aurélie has done a lot of the work that I've just presented. And with that, I thank you.